Hello, hello. This is Interneted. I'm Michael Bird.
And I'm Rob Murgatroyd.
And welcome to our show about tech, gadgets and the internet by a couple of blokes who are always being asked how to fix most of it. Isn't that right, Rob?
All the time. It never ends.
All the time.
So on this show, we'll be sharing our tech knowledge with you and keeping you informed with all the latest tech news and updates from around the internet. We'll also be opening a brand new case at our Agony Uncles Detective Agency, solving your tech woes.
And finally,
we'll be heading over to the Museum of Retro Tech, where we'll be taking a look at some of the moments of gadget history.
So, buckle up, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show from two blokes in our spare bedrooms. This is Interneted.
Okay then, to start the show, it's time for our weekly tech roundup. Each week we'll both bring the most interesting bits of news from around the world of tech, sifting through the wellness toilets, smart perfume and gamer chewing gum, so you don't have to.
I actually heard about gamer chewing gum. Wasn't it from Razer? Is that right? Did I get that right?
It's from a company that makes SSDs.
Yeah, I think I saw that on a YouTube video. And it
gives you the edge, apparently.
Is it like caffeine?
If you chew this, it's like, you know the advert for if you chew 5 gum, this will happen to you. Except you go into the video game and you're just really, really good.
It increases your FPS of
your eyes. Your typing speed goes from like 100 words a minute to 4,000.
All right, let's get some gamer chewing gum next time. And this show will be half the amount of time because we'll be like...
No one can understand it, but... We'll hear it.
Then we just play it back at half speed and it'll make sense to people. Right, shall I go first for our first bit of tech news?
Sure. What's happened?
Okay, so, it's funny you say what's happened because I'm going to be talking about WhatsApp. See what we did there. You know WhatsApp, you might know, but WhatsApp recently updated their privacy policy and there was this big uproar. Yep. And lots of people got notifications. So do you remember that? You think you probably would have got a notification.
I do remember that. I couldn't avoid it. You told me all about it.
Sorry about that. yes. So they basically had this whole thing with their privacy policy. It caused a little bit of uproar. Even went on to BBC News and other places. And so they kind of backpedaled a little bit. They were going to make some changes, I think, from the beginning of February. But they basically were like, no, we're not going to make any changes. But they are now going to go and make those changes. So there's going to be another pop-up that will appear in the coming weeks, which will reiterate WhatsApp's, the fact that their platform is end-to-end encrypted. And whilst they do need to, you know, use some of your personal data, they won't be using it for nefarious means. I mean, Rob, as you know, we now converse over a different platform, don't we?
Because we do. You took us to the extreme. We were talking on WhatsApp and then you posted your new profile picture on WhatsApp too. Please don't talk to me on WhatsApp. I'm now on Signal.
Yeah, so our conversations are so top secret that we need to be posting it on Signal. So just
end-to-end encryption isn't good enough.
No, I want
for us. We need more. We need like Fort Knox level of encryption.
So end-to-end encryption basically means that but the two people that are having the conversation, only those two people can see that because it basically gets encrypted at one end and the other person can then read it. They have an encryption key. So WhatsApp is end-to-end encrypted. So any information you post on there, in theory, they can't read.
So what is the data that they're able to access now?
So the data, I would double chat. I wouldn't ever want to provide legal advice, but the data that I believe they're going to holding on to is what do they call it? Telemetry, I think, is what the technical term is, which is essentially like how you use the app. So not what you're sending, but how you use it, how regularly you use it. I think it might even have access to your contact list, so the people that you're speaking to.
Okay.
And because WhatsApp is owned by the Facebook, a lot of the noise around the initial privacy policy discussion was around how they will pass that information to Facebook and so they can aggregate all that data together and create a bit of a profile about you. So
yeah, I remember they were talking about potentially looking at like location data, but it wasn't like where you are when you're using the app or anything like that. it was, they clarified later and it wasn't quite as scary, but
yeah. So but that big, that, you know, the news towards the beginning of this year, end of last year, did kind of did have a big surge of interest towards platforms like Signal, Telegram, and other apps like that. So yeah, as we now converse over Signal, and it, you know, I think we're doing all right.
We're taking a stand against.
We're taking a stand, our own personal stand.
We're showing Mark Zuckerberg who's really in charge, moving over to Signal. Yeah. While I still have Facebook downloaded on my phone,
he's quaking in his boots. He's lost two very loyal WhatsAppers. Anyway, so that's the news from WhatsApp. What's your bit of news?
So I think the most exciting thing for me this week was that we finally had another Nintendo Direct event.
Yeah, what's a Nintendo Direct event?
Have you heard of one? Have you seen one of them before?
I've not seen one of them. I am now a Nintendo customer.
You are, but you don't know what a Nintendo Direct is. I don't know. So they're essentially, Nintendo will sporadically throughout the year release little videos announcing new video games, but a Nintendo Direct is their sort of their big one. They'll announce a lot of games all at once, and they try and do their most exciting announcements at a Nintendo Direct. And I don't think we'd had one since, I think it was September 2019 was the last Nintendo Direct. So it was a really quiet year for Nintendo. And then all of a sudden they dropped the announcement that they're going to do another one. So this Nintendo Direct actually followed the 35th anniversary of Zelda, The Legend of Zelda. So everyone was expecting big things in the world of Legend of Zelda. A lot of people were hyping up the fact that they might announce Breath of the Wild 2 with Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
What's Breath of the Wild 1?
It is probably one of the highest rated games of all time that came out, and it's sort of started its own genre. It's an open world Zelda game that is absolutely fantastic and is physics based, and you can do all sorts of things in it, and the sequel to it is highly anticipated, but that wasn't announced, so sorry to let you down, but that wasn't announced. Oh. But other Zelda products were announced, so they're doing a remaster of The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, which was a Wii game, I think it was, Nintendo Wii game. So that's quite exciting for those people who are big fans of Skyward Sword. I never played it myself, but I've heard good things. There were lots of other announcements in this Nintendo Direct. So we also saw that Splatoon 3 is coming soon. Splatoon is, I guess it's Nintendo's version of Call of Duty.
But imagine Call of Duty, isn't it?
But with paintballs and like people with huge eyes, as opposed to
family friendly.
Very family friendly. And the whole idea is that you cover the map in your paint and whoever's got more paint wins, basically. It's a very popular game and they're making the third one. So that's quite exciting. And then something that's probably even more exciting for me is that a game called Fall Guys is coming to Nintendo Switch.
You introduced me to Fall Guys when
I did introduce you
when
to
we
Fall
were
Guys.
Allowed to meet in person before the how are we going to describe it, pre-pandemic, before the in our previous life before the end times. We played that, didn't we? And it was on PlayStation.
You say we played it. You came around to hang out with me and we were supposed to chat, and I said, oh, why don't you check out this new video game, and then I think 4 hours later you put the controller down after playing Fall Guys and then left, and that was pretty much the entire evening.
And I was clicking my fingers, snacks please. But Michael, we've snacks.
I was very forgiving with that, but I wouldn't let you have the Weetos, would I? Because they're too orange.
Fall Guys.
Anyway,
it's like such a silly game, isn't it?
It's such a simple game. It's if you've ever seen Total Wipeout on BBC with Richard Hammond, it's kind of like that. But you're running around as a little, I think they call them jelly beans. You're just a little guy that can jump and dive, and you've just basically got to go through all these really, really intricate obstacle courses with slime and swinging things and.
But
big hammers and all sorts of stuff going on.
What I loved about it, what made it an amazing game, was the fact that you play online against like 50 other people.
Load of people. And then
like every single round, only a certain number of people can get through. So you're all competing against each other, and you're like this little bean that can't really move, that you can kind of hop. Is that right? Like,
that's part of the joy of it, is that your movement is pretty awful. You want to do these really like precise movements, but all you can do is wobble around slightly and then jump in the air. So you're just trying to run through all these obstacle courses, and you're screaming at your TV to turn left when someone someone else is holding you back, and it's a good time. But that is finally coming to Switch. I think it was originally on just PlayStation for a while, so it's good that it's coming out on Switch, and I think it's coming over to Xbox as well, so that's another good
And is it, and I hope I'm using the right word, multi-platform? Can, would you be able to play against different...
It's cross-platform.
Cross-platform.
Yes, they will be bringing that as well. So it's great news for everyone, really. Everyone needs to play Fall Guys at some point. It's a good time.
So those are our two big news items for the week. I think we have a few smaller items. Nothing's going to top the patent for the Apple cables last week. Nothing's going to
top. I don't know. Dark mode Microsoft Word.
We really were scraping the barrel, weren't we? Okay, so I've got... So Jaguar have announced that by 2025, they are going to be all electric, which is...
As in, all of their vehicles produced will be electric, or they will be...
All of their vehicles powered. Produced will be electric.
Wow.
Yeah. By cool. And 60%, I think, and then 60% of Land Rovers will be zero emissions by 2030, which I think is interesting because Land Rovers are, I don't know, they're kind of off-road kind of...
They're not targeted at the eco.
No, well, like, I guess it's more just that electricity maybe isn't that reliable in like the middle of a desert or, you know, so that's true. Really interesting to see how that will work. But that's really cool. Jaguar have the I-Pace, which is... By the way, I love the fact that electric cars now classify as tech because all the tech news sites...
It does.
It's because of Tesla, basically. So that's why I think...
If
we
it
get
can
away
be controlled by an app, it counts and yeah, it can be on our show.
Exactly. So there's the I-Pace SUV, which I think is a lovely looking car and it's very, very cool. But yeah, so by 2025, there will be an all-electric car brand, which is...
That's very good. Do we know, does Jaguar have any current... electric vehicles?
Yeah, they have the I-Pace. The I-Pace is the only electric vehicle they have, and that's right. Fully electric. So yeah, so that's really cool. And if you're American, you call Jaguar.
Jaguar?
Yeah, Jaguar.
Is that what we
decided?
That's it. Jaguar. Yeah.
Jaguar.
Classic Americans.
All right.
Nice. So thanks. Something else I saw this week, and just a little follow up to what we mentioned last week with the old Australia, Google, Facebook debacle.
Yeah.
So. Basically, an update to that is that Google, they backed down. They gave in to the Australian government and they have paid a whole load of money. They've signed a whole load of contracts with Australian news producers. So they will now be paying extra money to those content producers. So Google will still be available in Australia. You won't have to miss the homepage. But Facebook took a stand. Facebook said, we're not going to give in to the Australian government. We're not going to pay this money for news publications to... feature content on our site. So now a whole host of Australian news sites won't be featured on Facebook anymore. Their articles won't be featured, which I think is pretty crazy that a government can take on a big company like that. And people, they didn't back down. They didn't give in.
Fair play. I'm not going to share an opinion what I think. I think that's good. Maybe or bad. Or both.
You think... Your position is intensely neutral.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We've talked about this on the show before. Sonos.
Oh, yes.
Which
we're both fanboys.
There is a March 9th or 9th of March event, product launch event. And
or, if you're in America, March 9. Because who needs the other letters?
Oh, that is honestly one of my biggest bugbears. March 9. I really don't like that. So they are going to be releasing a small battery-powered speaker, is what they're rumored to release, which I think we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
We did.
But the big one is they're going to be releasing headphones.
Ooh, this is exciting.
That is very exciting.
So
because
exciting.
Sonos make absolutely wonderful hardware. You may not like the sound quality if you're an audiophile, but you cannot deny the build quality. And the I think the stuff they make just looks really...
It looks really cool. And also just the user experience is so easy.
Exactly.
It's so intuitive. It just feels so quality.
So they are looking at making a pair of premium noise cancelling headphones. They look a little bit like the headphones you're wearing at the moment from what I see. The Sony whatever they are. They look
Sony
a little bit like that. But yeah, so that's going to be very exciting.
I wonder whether they'll follow in Apple's footsteps, and because I think Apple and Sonos are fairly closely linked in the technology world. I wonder if they'll position them in the same realms as the AirPods Max Pro Max AirPods, the big headphones from Apple.
Yeah, which is really expensive, but very, very high quality.
Yeah, I could see Sonos doing something similar, because that's what they do with their speakers.
I think you're probably right. I think these are going to be £500 plus pair of headphones, is my prediction.
But I'll still be tempted because it's Sonos.
I know. I have to sell stuff. I don't know. What can I sell?
Kidney?
Yeah. I got two shots of that, sell a kidney. But they are very nice, aren't they? Cool.
That's exciting. We'll definitely have an update on that when that comes around.
Oh, for sure. So
something I saw, I don't know if anyone out there has seen, but Nvidia released a series of graphics cards, the RTX 30 series of graphics cards last year.
Are they the ones where the founder launched them in, or like the CEO launched them in his kitchen and then he pulled the really big one out of the oven or something? Yeah. I mean,
that's exactly the one.
Peak 2020, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was an odd reveal, and the 3090 is absolutely gigantic. You could probably live in it. It's so big. But anyway, their RTX 3060 is a graphics card which is pitched as sort of the more affordable end of their graphics cards, and they're typically, obviously, they're originally aimed for gamers and people building gaming PCs, but a lot of people nowadays use graphics cards for cryptocurrency mining.
Okay.
And that has been a bit of a problem, especially with online shopping and scalpers. So these people that do this cryptocurrency mining, they scalp graphics cards. So they buy them as soon as they're released and as soon as they're available for the price that's out there. And they basically make it really hard for people to get access to. So Nvidia have been a bit fed up with this. And they've basically told people that the new RTX 3060 graphics cards coming out will have their capabilities for cryptocurrency mining cut. I think they said up to about 50% efficiency will be cut. So it'll be much, much harder to mine with the RTX 3060, which I think is a good step. I think it should be for people that are mainline consumers and that, you know, don't give in to the people that do scalping and all that sort of stuff. It should be for the main consumers. So I think it's a good step from Nvidia.
Because people buy a lot of these, don't they? And they attach them essentially to big, very powerful desktop PCs, and they use a lot of electricity to essentially do calculations to be able to get cryptocurrency.
To produce this cryptocurrency. Yeah, and because that's how they make money. But they literally burn through graphics cards doing this, so they'll just get used ones and new ones and they'll just burn through them. And it takes them out of the market for people that want to use them for other purposes.
What a strange state of affairs. I mean, it's like, I get the... It's just strange that so much electricity is being burnt through.
Oh, I know.
Am I right in saying the calculations being done are the calculations of the transactions of people making purchases, using the crypto coins to make purchases?
Yes. Yeah.
It hurts your head, doesn't it? But yeah. I mean,
that's a whole separate episode we could do on cryptocurrency, but I wouldn't be able to talk on. So you have to get someone else in for that one.
Neither me. We could talk about it like we know what we're talking about, like we do most of the time. Last thing, I mean, it's not I cannot not talk about Apple. Apple are reportedly developing a magnetic battery pack that kind of sticks to the back of your phone. So back of your iPhone. So you know that, I don't know if you know, but the newer iPhones, I think it's the 12s.
iPhone 12 series.
Have got MagSafe.
The magnetic backs.
Yeah. So you can basically stick on like a little, like really small hockey puck size thing, stick onto the back of your phone and it'll charge it a little bit like a charging pad. Well, they're going to create a battery pack that can stick on the back, which is pretty cool. It's quite.
I mean, it's a logical next step, isn't it? It's the sort of next accessory you'd think. If you've got a wireless charger and a battery pack that is magnetic, you think it goes together. So I can.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's quite cool.
Exactly. So why not? So we'll see where that goes. Rob, that's everything I've got. Have you got anything else?
That's everything I've got. Nothing else is interesting to me.
Okay. Nothing else. All right, well, that is it for our tech roundup. We'll be back with part two of Interneted right after this. Well, welcome back to Interneted, a show about tech, gadgets, and the internet. And it's now time for the part of the show where we take a brief trip to the Agony Uncles Detective Agency. Yes, we are the Agony Uncles, and this is our illustrious detective agency, solving crimes against tech since fixing games meant blowing the dust out of the game cartridge. In fact, since there were game cartridges. I think you can't call what like Nintendo Switches have got game cartridges. They're just glorified SD cartridges. Cards, aren't they?
You can't blow them. Do you know Nintendo Switch games, they say do not lick.
Yes.
Because they taste really bad and then everyone licks them.
I do know this. It's to stop people...
Have you tried it?
I haven't. I did read it. I did read it.
It's like when someone says, don't lick ice. You're like, but I kind of want to lick it.
I kind of want it. Yeah, so people don't swallow it. Is that right? Have I got that right? Something like that.
Yeah, I think so. Because they're quite small. Anyway.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, blowing dust out of game cartridges. What a time that was.
I know. What time to be alive.
Game cartridges in general, they were such a good invention because they loaded games so quickly, much faster than spinning discs. Like, they were like, slot in, instant, boom,
bosh,
done.
Cool. Like, yeah, anyway. Sorry, sir.
We're back. So yeah, welcome. Welcome to the Detective Agency. This week, we're going to open the doors once again to solve troubling tech mishaps, misdemeanors, and cold cases sent in by helpless bystanders.
We set this agency up because we're both those people who always get asked how to fix stuff. It's tough work, but somebody has to do it.
We're the heroes the city needs but not deserves. Is that right? Is that the way around?
We're not the heroes.
We're not the heroes they deserve or need. But we're here anyway.
But we're here the ones anyway. You got. So just put up with us.
What is the case we've got today, Michael? Who needs our help?
Well, today's case is all about smart homes, and it comes from Emily in London.
Hi, guys. I have heard a lot of people recently talking about making their homes into a smart home, especially during lockdown. I'm kind of keen to start doing it, but I don't really know where to start, if I want to go with lighting or with apps across my kitchen. Do you guys have any recommendations? Thanks in advance.
Okay. So,
interesting.
Smart homes. Smart homes. All right.
Where to start?
Well, I guess the first place to start is picking an ecosystem. So... there are three main ecosystems, which are?
So we've got, in the green corner, Google. In
are they
the
green?
Google are green, aren't they? Well, they're sort of the primary colours. In the primary colour corner, we've got Google. In the Jeff Bezos corner, we've got the Amazon Alexa.
I was going to say yellow. Is it Amazon yellow? We're doing Amazon's a fantastic orange. Job with the boxing analogies. And in the gunmetal grey corner is Apple with HomeKit. So basically, there are three main ecosystems you can pick. There are others, but I wouldn't bother with them. So Apple, Google, and Amazon. And it's getting a lot better nowadays. But previously, if you bought an accessory, it would probably work for one, maybe two, but not all of
probably
them.
Probably not all three. Yeah.
And generally, the most supported at the moment is Amazon Alexa. Sorry, yes. If I just triggered an Alexa. If anyone's listening,
all of them are like, yes.
Yeah.
I think choosing your ecosystem is the most important because it's sort of like choosing your base layer. It's the equivalent of choosing, do you want to go Windows or Mac?
Yeah,
it's
yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
There's two. They're all very different ecosystems, and they're all supported by different companies. And the devices and the capabilities of each of those differs, so you want to make sure you get the right one. So let's run through what each of them do.
Yeah, okay.
So we've got Google. The Google Assistant is the offering in the primary colour corner. And this is quite a good one, I think, for people that are quite heavily into the Android ecosystem. So if you've got an Android smartphone or an Android watch, you're probably already using the Google Assistant, even if you don't know it. So you'll get those notifications on your phone saying this is the weather in your area or this is news related to you. And that's all the Google Assistant. It's already curating that information for you. So the Google smart home system just extends that further into your home. So you can buy, as with many of the other smart home systems, you can buy first party speakers, and like I think it's called the Google HomePod or the Google Nest, one of those two.
I think it might
which
be
you
Google
can
Nest.
Use. Is the what?
I think it's the Apple HomePod, and the I think Apple it's HomePod. The I think it's the Google Nest.
The Google Nest. They've changed their names since they first came out. That's why it's confusing.
Google Nest. Yeah.
Google Nest. So that's similar to any of the other speaker devices where you just have a little one in the corner and it's always listening, and you can ask for it to do stuff. So Google, yeah, as I say, it's good for the integrations for your smartphone and if you've got heavily into the Google ecosystem. There are a few first-party devices, speakers and things, not a huge number. But I think that the struggle with Google is that it's not too many third-party devices that are supported by it.
Yeah.
The big boy for that is obviously the Amazon Alexa.
In the yellow corner?
I'm going to go with orange.
Orange, okay.
Yeah.
So Amazon is the most expansive ecosystem by far. They're pretty much any smart device you pick up will support Amazon Alexa. Loads of devices, and actually a lot of
it's probably the one that you think of when you think of a smart home.
Yeah,
when you think of like a speaker that talks to you, probably think of an Alexa already, right? So
yeah, and
it's the default one.
Absolutely. And a lot of devices now that aren't even made by Amazon have Alexa built in. So in fact, my headphones I'm wearing right now have got both Google Assistant and Amazon Alexa built in. And so there's tons and tons of devices you can use. And from an expansion and customization perspective, it's quite an open platform. So there's loads that you can do with it.
I'd wager to say that the Alexa platform is the coolest one for the number of like things you can do with it. Like if you have a dream and it's a smart home automation thing, if you have a dream, turning into MLK. If you have an Amazon Alexa dream,
dream big. Amazon. TM.
Never stop dreaming with Amazon. I should work for them. No, they are. Basically, you can do the coolest stuff with the Alexa platform.
Yeah, and if you have a dream, but you have an iPhone, then you can also dream with.
You can't dream as well in iPhone.
You can dream, but just you can dream in a walled garden. Right. So, as an Apple fanboy, this is my corner. So Apple have the Apple HomeKit, which is their version of it. And if you already have an iPhone, if you have HomePods, if you have Apple TV, then it's the best system to go for because it all links very nicely into that. There are still quite a few smart devices, but there's not as many as Amazon. Third party integration is quite limited.
But I guess the first party is, for a lot of people, it covers the basics.
Yeah.
You can still do like lighting, you can control your TV with it TV. It's got a lot of the basics that people need. It's just if you want to take it further and do a lot of the more advanced stuff, then it's possibly not the best for you.
Well, so they've recently done an update. They did an update last year, or they announced an update last year, and you can do some really cool things with it. So in terms of like privacy and security, it is by far the best, because what they try and do is they don't send stuff up to servers. They try and do as much of the processing in your home. So the way they do that is you basically have a device that is always connected to your internet, and that could be an Apple TV 3rd gen 4th gen, HomePod or a HomePod mini, or an iPad, and you can even go for an older iPad, and that then becomes like the device at your home that does all the processing. It sends some stuff back up to Apple, but generally it tries to keep everything at home, so it's quite good from that perspective. They also announced something called HomeKit Secure Video, which is if you have any cameras that support HomeKit support secure video, it will the video processing will be done, or at least it'll be kind of captured within your house in that device, and then it sends it up to iCloud, but using end-to-end encryption, so even Apple can't read it. And it can do some really cool things. If you use iPhoto and you take photos of people, and you have somebody at your front door, it will use your iPhotos and it will say, "Rob, is at your front door." So it just can do some really cool stuff. But there are solutions out there. So there's a solution called HomeBridge, which has been made by a bunch of developers, that allows you to bridge into other devices that aren't necessarily HomeKit supported. So I was telling, Rob, I was telling you before we did this show that there's a a home media platform called Plex that you and I both thoroughly enjoy, and you can use that.
Still yours, thank you.
You're welcome. You can use that to trigger other things. So you can basically say when I start playing movies, dim all the lights in my house and do this and do this. So I think, it's kind of dependent on how much you care about privacy and security, what kind of devices you have. I think, as you said, if you're very Apple, if you already have lots of Apple stuff, then HomeKit by far is the best. And the last thing to mention is there is this...
It probably is.
There's this new thing called Thread, which Apple and Google have announced support for, and it's basically an open protocol which if the device supports Thread and you have multiple devices that support Thread, the Thread protocol, it will create a mesh network. You don't have to do anything. It does it all automatically. And basically, as long as your device supports Thread, it will work in your HomeKit environment. And it will basically, it'll extend how far you can go within your house and your garden and all that stuff. It's really, really cool. But there's not many devices out there at the moment, because it was only kind of announced on Apple devices last year.
Yeah, so Thread is supported on just Apple HomeKit, or I think it's on Google.
Google Nest. And I suspect Amazon will probably support it soon enough.
Eventually.
Which then kind of changes things a little bit, because then
they're all connected and you can merge the two and there's no real
basically
one. That's, yeah. So, in summary, each one's got its benefits, but you've got to weigh up what is most suitable for you at the moment. If you're planning on doing it right now, if you're heavily integrated into the Apple ecosystem, or you're just a big security nerd, then go for that system. Or if you'd like to do really cool things, then go for the Amazon Alexa.
Yeah, and
basically don't go for Google unless you really, really want it.
And in terms of devices, one of the easiest places to start is lights, because lights are really they're relatively cheap, depending on what you want to get. And they're quite fun to experiment with, and they're quite easy to experiment with. And there are two routes you can go down. You can go down smart light bulbs, which basically means you replace the light bulb in the light bulb fitting. But that does mean if you turn the switch off, it will still turn the light bulb off, but you won't be able to turn it back on again. So you need
to leave it on. Just off, like in standby mode, basically.
Or you can put, like, some people put blanking plates over them, so like the circuit stays live. Or you can also get smart light switches. So as long as your bulbs are dimmable, then you can replace your light switch with a smart light switch. So that means if you have people who don't care or know about smart devices, they can still turn the light switch on and off. It's a kind of physical switch. But you can also control it using an app and, hey Siri, do this.
Yeah, that's cool.
My phone just fired up. I need to stop doing that.
Of course you did. I think lighting's a good place to start. From another practical perspective, I guess, like temperature control, that's obviously a big one that's integrated into a lot of systems.
So there's Hive from British Gas and Nest from Google, I think, own Nest, which is
Google now own Nest. Yeah, they've taken Nest on.
And there are a few other ones that, and again, like, so I think, don't think Hive supports HomeKit, but I think it might support Amazon Alexa.
I think it does, yeah.
There's lots of, that's really cool. So I think already you can tell Alexa to turn the temperature up in your house and things like that.
Yeah. And then, this is the thing with smart homes. I think you want to layer it. You want to start with some of the basics, and then you can add more and more smart devices to your home the more you want it. And in the future, there's some really cool things coming up. I think there's an Apple trailer or something where they integrated their smart car with their home pod so that you can start the car from your home, and you can set the temperature control, and you can tell the car where you want to go.
Yeah.
And then you get into the car and it will drive you to there, because it's a self-driving thing. So there's all sorts of cool things coming in the future. And
I think the other thing as well is when you can do what's called scenes, so you can like connect devices that you wouldn't necessarily think to connect together. So you could, like I was saying, so you could say, when I start a movie, dim the lights down, set the colored backlights to red, put the temperature up, make sure the front doors are locked, because you can get smart locks. You can do lots of really cool things like that.
I've seen a really cool one online. I can't claim this to be me, but someone set a security alert. So if there's an intruder, a smart alarm was triggered, and they had a whole selection of Amazon Alexa commands happening. So they said, dim the lights, then turn on a red light up to 100%, and then play the Darth Vader like breath. and then have him say something. And I just think that's really cool. Imagine walking in and, well, imagine walking in and burgling someone. Don't do that. But imagine testing that and just having like Darth Vader pop up in your lounge. I think that's really cool.
Stay at the school, kids. Don't burgle.
Stay at school.
Hey, two big takeaways. So pick your ecosystem. And don't burgle.
And don't burgle. Yeah, that's what I wanted to get across.
So yeah, there is so much to research, so much to look into. But really, as Rob said, choose your ecosystem, and then just start there basically, and make sure if you're buying devices, they work with that ecosystem. Okay, is that case closed?
I believe so. I think we've answered that on a basic level. Hopefully we've answered that for you, Emily.
I think we've at least had a go at just talking about it. So there we go. All right. So that's case closed, and it is now time for some retro tech. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the magnificent museum of retro tech, a totally not made up museum, where we preserve the greatest gadgets and tech marvels for generations to come.
You know what? I've realized that during lockdown, this is the only museum you can visit.
Yes, it's so true.
Look at that. We're the only museum that's open right now.
Yeah, and it's coming straight to you from where? Well, actually, before we get, do you want to explain?
Let me tell you what it is.
Do you explain what it is?
Each week, basically,
yes.
One of us will be bringing two items that will want to be submitted into the Museum of Retro Tech.
Yeah.
However, one of us has all the power and will only be adding one piece to the museum collection.
And one piece only?
One piece only, of course.
Where is our museum this week? Where was it last week? Was it
the Thin House.
It was the Thin House, yeah. Where is so the museum?
It's moved to another quirky house this week, but this time we're in Suffolk. So this one is called The House in the Clouds.
Okay. What's it like? Describe it to me.
It is. So it's an old water tower. And they tried to disguise this water tower by making it look like a house that's floating. So the sort of the stem of the water tower, I don't know if you'd call it the stem of the water tower, but it's displayed as a big rectangular building, but then at the top of this building it's got a fully fledged house on, and it's just like a house on a stick.
I've just googled it. Wow. Yeah, you're right.
Cool, isn't it?
It's like it looks like a tower block with a house plonked on the top. A very short tower block with a house plonked on the top. Big red.
It's like how I would have made a Lego house back in the day. I would have like stacked a whole load of things up if I wanted to make a tower.
Yeah.
And then just had a completely normal house on top of that.
Do you think they have a lift? Because it's quite a...
You can rent it out. You can stay there. Obviously, when the museum isn't there, you can rent it
out. It looks very Scandinavian, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Imagine the view's pretty good because Suffolk's pretty flat, so you can see a long distance.
Yeah.
Geography knowledge for you, everyone.
Thank you. Resident geographer. all right.
So this week, I am the curator of the museum, so I'll be in charge. As curator, I have absolute authority as to what makes it in, Michael. So you've really got to impress me today. What have you got?
Okay, so I bought two items, as always. They are mobile phones. They are mobile phones from our collective childhoods. Not that we spent much of our childhood together, but there we go. So the Nokia 3310.
Oh, yes.
And the Motorola Razr V3, they were both phones from the early 2000s, both of which have had modern remakes.
They really have. That's interesting. It shows that timeless classics never go away, do they?
So should I, which one would you like to see first?
I'd like to know about the Nokia, because this is a phone that I remember, I think my mum had it, and I thought it was really cool, because she was the first person in our family to have a mobile phone.
Okay.
Out for that.
Okay, so the Nokia 3310, it was basically the phone that you think of when you think of a 2000s mobile phone. So it's what they call a candy bar phone. So it looks like a little bit like a chocolate bar. It's probably about the size.
It's chunky.
It's chunky.
It's
It's kind of got like it's rectangular with like a slightly curved body to it. It hasn't got, it's not a touch screen. It's got a really small black and white monochrome screen. It has a blue button or a little grey button with a blue line on it, a cancel button, an up and down arrow, and then whatever it is, the 12 keys, 1, 2, 3, all the way to star, yes, zero, and hash.
Yes.
Classic. Absolute classic.
Absolute classic.
It was made from the 1st of September. It was launched on the 1st of September 2000. So genuinely, like, it's a millennium phone.
This is really early stuff.
And it was discontinued in 2005, 2006, that kind of time.
Okay.
It has, the best bit, replaceable covers. So you could replace the cover with whatever you want. So I think I had... I think
you had the sparkly gem one, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. What would it say on the back? Had like a, yeah, sparkly, little fairy dust type.
You know. I think you had a little Scooby-Doo.
Live, laugh, love.
Live, laugh, love.
Yeah. It had a removable battery. Yeah. And it had a reported battery life of 10 days on standby. Oh,
wow. Yeah. 10 days. Who needs to charge? Exactly. Just buy a new phone at that point.
Exactly. And you would take the front and the back cover off and the battery, and it had a full size SIM card slot. And
I always remember thinking, like, it was so... I always thought I was going to break it. You know, the creak of the back of the phone, yeah, when you'd rip it off and it would crack and you'd be like, what is happening?
And
was this the phone that everyone thinks is indestructible?
It is the
like
one.
If they were going to make like a bulletproof wall, you'd make it out of this phone, right?
It's the meme. This is memed on the internet. It is basically the indestructible phone. You can drop it from the Eiffel Tower and it will be fine. And there's lots of stories of like people leaving it in their car switched off, and like 6 months later coming in and turn it back on, and it's like full battery. So yeah, yeah, it's so like this is the absolute classic Nokia phone in the days where Nokia was a proper, I think they still manufacture phones, but this was like in Nokia's heyday. This was the phone that everyone wanted.
This is iconic. And I think this one was where I first played Snake. And that's big.
Of course. How did I miss Snake? The game that many people would have played to pass the time. Nowadays, people, sit on Facebook or scroll for BBC News. It had none of that.
Nah.
All you had was Snake, text message Snake. That was going to cost you 30p to send. And that's about it, really. Okay, so that's the Nokia 3310. The next phone I'd like to, or the next thing I'd like to bring, is the Motorola Razr V3. Slightly newer phone. It was launched in 2004, and it's a flip phone. So it basically closed. It would look, it's probably about the size of a, maybe like slightly smaller at the top than an iPhone, and a bit thicker, like an iPhone, like an iPhone 6. That probably doesn't really help many people. I don't know. iPhone-y size. And it had an LCD screen on the front, a little camera on the front, and then it flipped open. And so it had this kind of huge, hump at the bottom, big, like, whatever it was at the bottom. And
the
you had this
joint.
Yeah. And you had a keypad, which was like brushed metal. And then you had a big screen. And it was it was one of the last of the great flip phones before smartphones hit the scene. There were many versions of the Motorola Razr. So it was the V3i and various other versions, V3X.
But this was the greatest one, wasn't it?
This was the original. It had a color screen, a VGA camera, which meant, I can't remember what the megapixels, but it was not very good.
I don't think megapixels were around then.
I think it was...
pixels.
Pixels, yeah. It had email, WAP, which is, for those more younger people listening, the very, very slow black and white internet, rubbish internet.
And not the Nicki Minaj song that came out recently. No. It didn't have that
install. It's not that. And Java, Java, which meant you could install games. I'm pretty sure I had a Razr, and I'm pretty sure I had Monopoly on it. I just can't remember.
You?
I think I did.
That's so cool.
I think I
paid. You would have been that kid on the school bus where everyone was gathering around your seat and you're like, guys.
For sure.
He wants to play some Monopoly.
And the Motorola V3 was the best-selling clamshell phone to date. It sold 130 million units during its time.
Wow.
Now the and it had 8 days on standby, and they had the hot pink version. They had gold Dolce & Gabbana version, which is the V3i, product red, loads of other bright colors. It was like, you know, you could get whatever color you want. I knew people who had the hot pink version of the Motorola Razr V3.
I think it was the coolest one. I think they had had like a black and red one. And yeah. I remember seeing that advertised and I thought, oh, that's the phone of dreams.
Exactly that. So, right, I'm going to wrap up because I don't want to take too much more of your time, Mr. Curator. So the Nokia 3310 was $129.99 launch, about £230 today. And the Motorola Razr V3, about £200 a launch, about £300 today. So those are my offerings to you, sir. I'm going to slide them across the desk whilst we look out over the fields of, where was it again? Sorry?
Suffolk.
The fields of Suffolk.
Well, yeah, thank you for that. That's two fantastic items you submitted. And it is genuinely quite a difficult decision because the Nokia 33010 is so meme-worthy that it that alone could make it go into the museum.
Yeah.
But then the Motorola Razr, it's the sassiest phone. Like the flip phones were the sassiest phones of all time. Oh, and I think an entire generation up on the
phone,
losing out.
Hanging up on the phone by flipping it. Oh, I miss
If you were
that.
Angry at someone and you'd slam that thing together in one hand.
Yeah, that is so satisfying.
You'd feel powerful.
Yeah.
Having said that, the resurgence of flip phones, it confuses me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why people are looking at flip phones now and they're thinking that's a good idea. But I can see the resurgence of Nokia 33010 style phones coming back. So I think for that reason, I'm going to bring the Nokia into the Museum of Retro Tech.
Wow. I am absolutely delighted with that. Very, very delighted with that. So is that it?
I think that's it. I think that's going to have to be the item that gets submitted. So welcome to the collection, Nokia 33010. We don't need a glass case around it because it's indestructible.
and if for whatever reason the phone lines go down at the museum, we just charge it once and it'll be fine for like 6 months, won't it?
There you go. So that's it from the Museum of Retro Tech. And with that, it's time for us to end the show. Thanks for joining us in this episode of Interneted. We hope you enjoyed it. Interneted is hosted, produced and written by Michael Bird and me, Rob Murgatroyd. If you've got any suggestions or you'd like to submit your question to the Agony Uncles Detective Agency, you can send us a voice message on our website anchor.fm/interneted. That's anchor.fm/interneted.
And we are releasing episodes every week. So to make sure you don't miss out on our next episode, hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to give us a cheeky 5-star rating. I really should change that bit of the script.
You still haven't changed
every it. Every time I say that, cheeky, I regret. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. And we hope to see you next week for the next episode of Interneted.